Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program I explore the ongoing revelation of spirit, how we are evolving on this planet to become more aware of who we are and our ongoing interaction with the cosmos. So tonight's guests are people who are very much exploring those realms. We'll be talking about behind the scenes of the human experience with Dominique Mehrhoff and Ella Owen. So thank you both for being here.
Thanks, Alan. It's really nice to be here.
Right. And I've been in touch with Dominique and Ella, and I've been working with them on something they call VR, which is, what does that stand for again?
That's for vibrational recalibration.
Right, vibrational recalibration. And I've been vibrationally recalibrated myself a few times.
Yes, you have.
And it's felt very good, I think. No, I can report that I noticed a shift and just my general feeling of who I am and my sense of the world has gotten easier, I would say, from your work.
Fantastic, yeah.
So, I'm talking to England, so Dominique and Ella are in England, and if you're over there, I recommend contacting them. What's your website?
It's vibrationalrecalibration.com.
Okay, so now behind the scenes of the human experience is the topic, and vibrational recalibration is a method for understanding the human experience. How would you qualify it?
Well, basically, 2 years ago, something started downloading for Ella and myself. And what it was on one hand a method or a way of working with people so that they can change their vibration, and by that I mean to dissolve the patterns that are limiting them. And on the other hand, what downloaded was this whole body of work, so many, many different perspectives on what these patterns are specifically and how we can resolve them, how we can get them to interact better amongst people, and how we can activate certain things like peak states and activate a lot of potential for the individual.
So, I'll ask Ella. If we don't have these patterns, then would you say we're an enlightened, free person?
Yeah, it kind of brings us closer to who we essentially are. It's like our wholeness and our perfection. It allows us to be able to go with the flow of life much easier. Things, as you mentioned, things feel a lot easier for us in life.
Yeah.
Because work on these illusions which are kind of holding us back.
Anybody can answer. I mean, why did we create these patterns and illusions to begin with?
I mean, actually, I think these patterns are sort of our life's lessons. So these challenges that we've decided to take on are the vehicles through which we'll find out who we are, basically. These will present us with opportunities for challenge and for expansion.
But you also know that in most cases, for most people, they're just a recycling of situations that a lot of people never get beyond because they're creating the same thing and reacting in the same way if they're not conscious, right?
Yeah, I mean, when we're recycling with these patterns, they keep on coming up, these themes, again and again. Essentially, we're obstructing the movement of life, the movement of transformation, because life basically wants us to sort of allow these things to come up and to integrate the lesson. It's like the digestive process. You take in the food, you integrate it, and it becomes part of who you are. And it's the same thing with life experience. But what happens with some of these challenges is that on some level, maybe on a mental or emotional level or even deeper, we obstruct them, and then that's when they become repetitive themes that we kind of rail against and revisit.
And that's what it is for a lot of people who choose. I mean, that's their choice, but I mean, what do you suggest, though, before we get into your work, just for the average person that's not aware that this kind of work is possible? I mean, how do you talk to someone?
I mean, I think the most basic form of self-help that you could do is just to say yes to life, you know, just to say yes to what life offers you. So if you were able to access interesting tools like vibrational recalibration or other methods, then just try to say yes to what life offers you.
Right, but if you're creating the same types of relationships over and over again, we know people who probably have done this all the time, then they're not getting the lesson, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, people come to it at different levels. So, you know, if they can find a level that which will help them in terms of it, maybe for them acceptance, it could be forgiveness of themselves. It could be them having more kind of love for themselves, for example.
Right.
It could be that they need to go through a process of anger in order to shift them up to a next level where they can see a little bit more, have a little bit more awareness of what's going on.
Mm. Right. And I think your work, Vibrational Recalibration, though, is about really accelerating the movement in consciousness, because we're in a period of acceleration. So,
yeah, that's exactly what this work is. This is kind of laser work. You know, we specifically identify the patterns, we laser in on them, we use vibrational techniques to just dissolve the patterns right then and there. So it's about accelerating consciousness, that's exactly right.
And it's been given to you, downloaded, as you said, so yes, you're a part of this acceleration. We all are,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, clearly something came through for us, and maybe we should explain a little bit about how we work.
Yes, do it, please.
We use kinesiology to muscle test these insights that come through to us. Maybe Ella could say something about kinesiology?
Yes, well, how we use kinesiology, which is essentially muscle testing, is that we can access more truth of the situation, so it helps to keep us on track with where we're going. Kinesiology itself, the muscle testing, it allows us to access our innate intelligence, subconscious and superconscious intelligence. So we can actually kind of access a lot more information that is just in our conscious minds at that moment.
It allows us to access it because it bypasses the average, the normal waking mind, and you're talking to the being, the essence of the being yourself, right?
That's right. Yeah. So how we use it is we use it first with clients to identify the patterns, and then to identify specifically what they need to do to correct the patterns, but also in the creation of this whole body of work, whenever we get an insight as to a specific human pattern, we muscle test to see if we're on track.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, mostly we are, but sometimes we have to adjust a little bit. So the whole point of this is that the whole body of work vibrates at a certain level of truth.
Mm. It brings us to a certain standard that the kinesiology holds.
Yes, we're trying to operate at the level of universal truth, basically.
But how, I mean, I know you're a kinesiologist, Ella, but how accurate is kinesiology? I'm just asking. I mean, how do we know that we're truly accessing and not influencing it? That's what
The thing with kinesiology is it's your intention is really part of it. So you have to have a very pure intention when you're using muscle testing kinesiology. You need to be coming from intention of for the highest good rather than from your personal agendas. And that's what kind of makes a difference in the kinesiology being accurate. It's your intention towards it. I mean, the way that, because I've been using it for many years, the skill, it's an art and it's a skill that kind of gets stronger and stronger over time.
So you have a way of just really feeling clear with yourself, with not any agendas or anything putting on top of it. Can you do that? Can you be pretty removed from the outcome?
Yeah, you need to come from a sort of childlike curiosity about the situation rather than having a kind of knowing or thinking about what the outcome is already. And with the muscle testing, we do actually ask permission every time we muscle test if we can muscle test around a certain situation.
Mm.
If we're not given permission, that indicates to us that there's something out in terms of we're not coming from that pure intention.
Okay, I just wanted to clear that up. I know that's just a tool, and really not the work itself is about the clearing, of course. So
yes.
I just want
clearing and activating as well.
And activating. So, okay, so let's go through it.
vibrational recalibration. To start with, we are all vibrating at a certain level in many different areas of our life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you have a scale where you see where people are at. You want to go over that? Is that a good place to start the real study of the
world? Yeah. We work with David Hawkins' Map of Consciousness, and maybe Ella can speak about it.
Yeah, we use it as a template. So David Hawkins is a spiritual teacher, and he has, over many years, experimented with muscle testing, and he's found that there is a map of consciousness where he's mapped out on a level, on a scale from 1 to 1,000, and each number in the scale represents a different energy field, a different energy frequency.
A level of consciousness.
Which is a level of consciousness. Mm. So it starts off, for example, with shame at 20, then it moves up through a lot of different emotions up into, for example, love, which is at 500, and then joy, peace, and enlightenment.
For example, he says that the average level of humanity is 200. So it's very interesting because shame resonates. It's the lowest vibration. It's much lower than anger, for example, which is getting, much more. So there's much more movement in anger. And then you get up to courage, which is even higher. And then we come into the level of 200, which is the level of humanity, 205, which is the average level of humanity, which is very low. Mm-hmm. And then when you go into the sort of educated arenas, you're going into the 300s. And what's very interesting is that the scientists, like the real genius scientists like Einstein and Stephen Hawking, for example, they resonate at 499, which is kind of the cap for the scientific thinking. And once you go past 500, you're going into the field of love, and then you're going into a much more spiritual dimension. And then from 700 to 1,000, you're looking at the sort of enlightenment field. So it's a very interesting map to work with.
So shame is the very lowest level of consciousness, you're saying?
On this template, yes. This is, shame is it. Shame is 20.
That's really interesting. So shame, according to this, brings us to the lowest level.
Yes.
And it's so rampant in our culture as well.
Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah.
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 So, but somebody could have aspects of shame but also register very high on the overall scale, right?
When we first started working with people, the corrections would be that they would have to do a lot of releasing of emotion. So just having the intention of releasing emotion from the heart, and a lot of these sort of lower calibrating emotions would have to be released. So they're little pockets of shame or anger that are held in our energy field and that need to be released to raise our vibration.
Mm. The thing is, as we go up the scale, it's not that we lose shame, all shame from our life. It's just that we can master that.
And we don't resonate with it anymore.
Yes, it means it doesn't control us.
Yeah, it's not running our lives. So when you say shame, that would be the predominant emotion that is running someone who's living at that level.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Because we're all still working on all aspects of our life. I mean,
of course, yeah.
So you work one by one with each emotion,
the person will come, and before they come, we prepare their session, and we may discover that they need to resolve some sabotage, for example. And as they're releasing this sabotage, the corrections that come up may be now release some shame, now release some anger, now tune into yourself for some information, some kind of message. So there can be a lot of emotional releases that happen in order to raise their vibration. Sometimes it's about tuning into themselves. Sometimes it's about tuning into the field of love. Mm-hmm. So these short corrections, very short energetic corrections, resolve the dense energies of the sabotage, for example.
But when you people come to the session, the place ultimately you want to get them to is beyond all their patterns into a pure, enlightened state. Would you say that?
Well, that's a big question.
If you're going to work with people, you have to have a place you want to get them ultimately, right? That's why I asked.
I would say that for ourselves personally, because we're continually working with the system as we create new pieces and stuff, that is our objective, is just to kind of reveal our essence to ourselves, because we're always living our essence, but it's about realizing it, isn't it?
Mm.
So with clients, they'll come with various goals, like somebody who needs to pull love into their life because that's going to raise their vibration. So it's not that they want a relationship like they want a new car. It's because this is going to expand them to be loving. Mm-hmm. So they come with this theme of relationship, and we work on that theme. But ultimately, it's about releasing the illusions.
Just another side note, do you feel you can only bring people as far as you both are, or do you feel like you're kind of conveying a higher aspect of the greater mind?
Mm. Well, I think that within vibrational recalibration, we work with a field which has a certain level of consciousness. It has a certain level that people can heal and transform within. So this allows them to maybe transfer from a further level than us personally, individually can.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it means we need to.
Setting the cap on how much they can transform.
Because
in a sense, we're anchoring the field here on the planet, but I think people can transform according to their paradigm, and that's kind of quite interesting because we've just started working with creating new paradigms, new personal paradigms, like upgrading people's paradigm.
Uh-huh. Well, talk a little bit about that, but also I'm also curious if talk about this field dynamics as well.
Well, our experience of the field is that it seems to be a living thing that is anchored by Ella and myself. And how we've experienced it is that it really seems to have guided us. So the very beginning of VR was on Summer Solstice Day, June 21st, 2 years ago. We're just coming up to 2 years. And when that very night where we got the crucial insights, which were the birth of this work, there were fireworks in the sky over the sea in England. And so it was kind of a cosmic night. And when we muscle tested, we said, oh, you know, was that really about us? Was that a celebration of this moment of creation? And it tested that that was the case. So we have this kind of communication going with the field. And then in terms of our experience of the potency of the field, it seems to be increasing and increasing. Mm-hmm. So initially when people would have to do a correction, they would have to do it for a minute, for example. Each meditation would be a minute long. And then after the sessions, they would have lots of homework to do. Mm-hmm. And now the corrections are about 2 seconds each. So it's, you know, the potency has massively jumped. And we've also done a lot of vibrational recalibration on the field itself, which has made it that much more potent.
So it's a living thing, huh, this field, that's interacting with human consciousness itself. Would you say that?
Yeah.
Is it a new phenomenon, the field, or has it been around forever?
No, I think that fields are created. You know, people create fields around them personally, but also in everything has a field, and it'll have a certain that field will have a certain vibration and level of consciousness and awareness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's all these pockets of fields which are interacting all over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's important for us now in this time when we're transforming that we are creating strong fields which have got high levels of awareness and consciousness. So this can actually help to move this shift now.
And also fields that are really aligned to this planetary transformation as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I think the VR field is definitely aligned to that.
So the VR field is hooking into bigger fields of transformation.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, for us it's very clear why it came through now.
Why? Well, tell me what you've got.
Well, because we're about to quantum leap, basically. Humanity is about to quantum leap into a new experience of itself. And so, VR work is contributing to helping people raise their vibration so that they can transition. And the more of us that, you know, raise our vibration, the easier it is for the other people to sort of you know, fall in that flow, basically. So it's participation in this big movement of consciousness.
Right. No, I liked what you said, that humanity is about to experience a new aspect of themselves. How does that hook up with what you said about personal paradigms? Can you talk about that?
Well, in terms of personal paradigms, our work is to expand the box that we live in. Mm-hmm. You know, so our paradigm is our box in a way, and we want to sort of blow the lid off of that box and create a much larger context. So we have the sense that, you know, we're working in a quantum field, so we should be able to visualize things and manifest them instantly, basically. Or we should be moving towards that, practicing that, because that's going to, you know, that's a possibility for us. We also felt that in this new paradigm, the aging process should be quite different. So even though at 80 years old you won't look the same as 17, the decay, that decay that we experienced when we were sort of really embedded in matter, it shouldn't be the same. Like the cells, maybe more wisdom will be etched in the body, but there'll also be this vibrancy and all this wisdom that should be radiating, and which you do see it on some people, like Nelson Mandela, for example.
Mm.
You know, he's an older man, but he's integrated the gifts of life, so he really radiates, and his cells look very radiant. And I think that's...
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating. And is this what you mean by the new experiences of humanity?
Well, this is the new paradigm that we're interested in creating for ourselves and people who come to us. We have a method of, you know, creating, activating, or maybe just you could say upgrading their own personal paradigm. Mm-hmm. And then the more we do that, we create a field of much more empowered people.
Mm. It's really coming down to choice, so people can choose their own paradigm that they would like to create for themselves and to witness, basically.
Yeah, no, I'm totally in alignment with exactly your vision and what you see as possible. And you said humanity will experience a new part of themselves. Sounds like this is what you mean, the changing of the aging process, the awakening of new senses, the subtleties mm-hmm. of feeling and experience. These are all new paradigms we are moving into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So VR is a tool. So the idea, though, behind VR is you have to get rid of what's in the way before people can experience this new level of awakening, right?
Yeah, maybe not get rid of, but transform the energy. So you take the energy and it's sort of, it then becomes available energy for creating the new expanded you.
Mm. We also use processes which initiate that process as well. To initiate the new paradigm.
Right, so rather than getting rid of, we're not always getting rid of stuff, but sometimes we're just activating stuff.
Okay, so like in this process, so someone would come to you, as you were saying, you mm-hmm. test where they are, and then take us through the process.
Okay. Ella, can you get the process over there? It's a brand new process. We just created it in the last week.
But you've been doing it because I've done it with you.
What we did with you was a peak state of consciousness around love, wasn't it?
Well, we did a couple of different sessions. They were...
Yeah.
Well, you outlined the process, and hopefully you'll publish a book on it as well, right?
What we do with the paradigm shift, creating a new paradigm, is that we kind of go through a visualization and also get them to kind of step into a new portal. So this is the new portal is where they can create the new paradigm and really feel, talk to us about what it really feels like. So they're kind of really anchoring it for themselves.
Mm-mm.
So this is just kind of like a sketch of what the sort of thing that we do in a session for people.
I just have to tell you, I have been experiencing some peak states of consciousness, so thank you for what we've done.
Great.
Yeah. That's really exciting as well, the peak states work that we're doing too.
So we'll get to that after this. So, yes, tell us about...
the new paradigm.
Yeah, well, the work, this, you know, step-by-step process, if you want to share it.
Well, first we sort of discuss with the person, and this can be quite lengthy because you have to really... dig deep and kind of find what are the new things you'd like in your new paradigm. So For example, one of them we put was instant healing, for example. So when something comes up for you, or even perhaps before it even comes to the surface, that you kind of are able to transform these things so you don't get stuck in things and then repeat them, as we were discussing earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So you infuse your new paradigm. You're basically creating a field for yourself, but it's a specific field that's going to contain you. So you put in all the different elements that you want for how you want your experience to be, and the sort of belief systems, i.e. I'm not aging anymore, I'm just growing in radiance, I'm able to transform things easily, I'm able to connect with everybody on a level and feel equal to and, you know, welcome everybody into my field, expressing gratitude, for example. So we infuse the field. And then we take a step into a portal, and then we have various corrections that we do to just shift the energy body. And it's quite a simple process, really, isn't it?
So yeah, the person comes to you and says, this is what I want, or do you tell them what it is that they would...
We kind of discuss, really, what they would like to achieve and what we can offer. And
you give them the options, like a menu. You can
come. Yeah, there's a menu, really. Usually people come with the theme they want to work on, but somebody like yourself would say, yes, I'll have a new paradigm, please. Mm-hmm. And then what we do is we would muscle test to see sort of what are the elements. And sometimes we think we've put all the elements in the field for the new paradigm, but there might be still some more. But the muscle testing will say, no, there's something else. So you'll dig around a little bit until you identify all the elements that you need in your new paradigm.
Well, the muscle testing also involves going through that scale, right? Describe that, because I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, okay. Well, we use the scale in order to calibrate or measure where a person is at within a particular pattern. So before we do the corrections with somebody, we can assess where they're at, and then after they do the corrections, we can then reassess how they have shifted. In terms of their energetic
body.
I see.
And it kind of anchors it all as well, with muscle testing that.
Right, and then
witness the change.
And then talk about those corrections then.
Okay, so the corrections are, we have a whole series of different little energetic corrections. So we'll generally start people off with what we call a unity meditation, which is just white light through the center of their body. Then in the early days, people had to release a lot of emotions from the heart field, as I was saying. So it would be just witness the release of shame, witness the release of anger, witness the release of fear, and so on. So a lot of deep emotional clearing. But it wasn't to re-experience the emotion. It was just to see it. You know, that witnessing, when you are witnessing the release of fear, it's actually happening. You're working in that quantum way. Then very often it will be visualizing love from the heart of the universe coming down to your heart, and then sometimes sending it out to yourself or to your desired goal, for example.
Can I ask you how you came up with these corrections? Like, how did you know what to do, what they were, and that they worked?
Well, the first night that we started working, we had just gone down to Brighton, and we were working on this little project. We just said we'd play around, and we were working with this book called Breaking Free, which is by a woman called Anne Brewer, and she's a woman who wrote a book called something about the 12 strands of DNA. You know, I can't remember the title, but it was about reconnecting the 12 strands. And in her second book, there were a lot of little energetic corrections or statements that you had to make. And she said, when you make this statement, it will achieve this for you. So this was all well and good to do it. But, of course, the reasoning mind, you know, that questioning mind always says, well, you know, I'm not so sure. So what we did was we muscle tested. So we would test ourselves before, and then we would make the little statement and test ourselves after. And in fact, it was true that, you know, making this statement or visualizing light or, you know, doing these little actions actually shifted our vibration. So that was the key insight. And so from there, we just started adding, getting little ideas like, oh, if you release from the heart, or if you have white light pouring over you, or if you have to tune into yourself. And then as we started working it, it became clear that certain corrections were much deeper. Like, definitely when you have to tune into yourself and you pull through a message, that is a very very strong vibrational correction. And what happens with that is two things. Either you'll pull through a message that will be something pleasant, which raises your vibration, so that positive vibration reduces the heaviness of the unwanted pattern, or you'll be pulling out, like kind of purging some old stuff. So in this case, the person might go back and start seeing pictures of old little energetic moments that were frozen in time, like difficult childhood moments, or, oh, that's when my mother said this to me, which was painful, or this happened. And then they start re-experiencing the emotions, so they're pulling through these sort of purging messages, and that also raises their vibration.
So it's shamanic in a way, that level of the work, and I would say.
Okay, yeah.
So then you bring through these, and there's probably a lot of remedies that you haven't even discovered yet that could really accelerate the process.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, it's all for experimentation, really, experimenting on ourselves and seeing what works, and then we add it into the body of work.
I'm sure there's a lot to say about the work. Like, what are some of the successes you've seen by doing this?
I mean, beyond our own personal sense of having really expanded.
Well, you could talk about that as well, what your personal sense is for yourself about how you...
Yeah. I'll just mention a few interesting cases.
Yeah.
There was, at one point, we were recommended that a 60-year-old Buddhist nun come and see us. And she was somebody who really wanted to teach Buddhism, but had this absolute phobia that totally paralyzed her, and she would be ill for weeks before even speaking and ill after it. So it was, quite an obstacle for her. And in fact, she felt that it wasn't even worth living if she couldn't teach. Mm. And so we realized that some people were transforming really well with VR and some people weren't getting their results. And that's when we created core approaches. Do you want to say a bit about core approaches?
These core approaches are basically... what stops people from transforming full stop. So it's like a dam which stops them from actually kind of making that shift. And the dam could be something, for example, like a deep vulnerability that they have where they feel unsafe when they kind of go through this shift to the other side where they achieve what they want. Mm. It could be, for example, that they feel that they're kind of losing something, part of them is dropping away, or it could be something like that they're not being able to have their needs met because they're not communicating their needs.
Mm. Right, but it's like a familiar part they might not want to let go of, even though it's not in their best interest.
Well, it's a deeply unconscious pattern, generally an energy pattern that they're not aware of, that obstructs transformation. So no matter what transformation work you do on this blockage, on this thing that you want to resolve, it'll go to a certain point and then it'll hit a wall, basically. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting with this woman is our sense with this deeply held pattern was that for certain people, transformation makes them feel so vulnerable that they're going to splinter and die. So as we started working on this piece with this woman, all of a sudden she burst into tears and she said, I feel like I'm going to splinter and die. And it was a bit of a light bulb moment for us. It sort of confirmed our insight about this pattern. So basically we calibrated the pattern. We made her go through the corrections. We had this moment where she sort of burst into tears and confessed this fear that she had. And then we continued with her. And that resolved the pattern. When we calibrated, it was resolved. And then she went on to start teaching Buddhism, and the thing has been completely resolved. And so we've had this experience with quite a few clients. And
Go ahead. No, that was instant transformation, because it's more, I found it more of a subtle process for myself.
Yes, probably.
For some people, it can be. It's just like what they need just to shift something to the next level.
And it also depends on how far along you are, really, I suppose.
I think with her, it was really interesting because on this particular thing what she wanted to address with the teachings, she had used so many different modalities up until that point over a few years, like counselling and homeopathy and all sorts of things. But she just couldn't get there. And this is why we really wanted to kind of look deeply into this, and that's how we actually develop these core approaches for people who can't get beyond a certain point.
Wait, so the core approach would be what then exactly?
Core approaches are patterns that are held, but they're much more deeply held than the normal patterns that we deal with day to day. So now, before every session, we just have to check, do they have any core approaches, meaning do they have any really deeply held obstacles to transformation that we need to give specific attention to?
And if they do, then you test to find out what they are.
We find out what they are, and then we work on it like any other pattern, but we make sure we address any sort of any of these deep obstacles.
Oh, so they might not be coming for that, but you'll find them.
Yeah, we have to identify them, otherwise the work's not going to actually have an impact.
So this is like therapy then, in a sense. I mean, psychotherapy.
Well, no, because nothing is done on a mental level. It's done on the energy level, really.
And when we say that people can feel the emotions sort of coming up, because we're working on energy level, that kind of is just like an instantaneous feeling of something clearing. It's not that we dwell on emotions or dwell on something
on the mental body.
I didn't mean it was like psychotherapy in its action, but the results hopefully would be the result of what that would hope to achieve, which is a clearing of these deep patterns in somebody.
Yeah, absolutely, for some people.
Another thing that we've recently started working with is that we realized that because we're holding the field, if Ella and myself on an either conscious or subconscious level are holding this idea that this client cannot achieve their goals or cannot transform, then that would block the transformation, or that would create a less potent field. And we also have to check beforehand whether the client themselves are consciously believing that they can achieve their goals, because sometimes they come, but still consciously, they don't believe that they can do it. So basically the field has to be cleared for them to have maximum, you know, possibility for it to be as potent as it can be for them.
And so I get all that, but I think you can also talk about the other aspect of VR, vibrational recalibration, which is planetary. Can you talk about those? That, because I think that's fascinating, where you work on the Earth or groups of people and.
Right. Yeah. Well, at a certain point, we started getting a lot of downloads about the possibility of working vibrationally on the planet itself, and so we realized that. We could stand in and be surrogates for the planet, and we started doing sessions on the planet. And that was very interesting. What we found was that the planet was basically felt like a bit of an adolescent and was a bit afraid about the shift that it was going through, a bit afraid about losing the, you know, deforestation, losing the oil. And because we operate from a perspective of unity, our perception is that everything is perfect, that we're going into the shift together. But it does make sense that the planet is adolescent, because humanity is in this adolescent phase as well. Mm-hmm. And so we're about to you know, make a jump into the mature phase. So it stands to reason that the planet is also going through this kind of, the same kind of emotional experiences that we are, really.
Right. So what did you do for the planet?
Well, we started doing group work, and we would just muscle test and see what the planet needed, and then do the corrections together as a group. And actually, the work, it felt quite dense, because, you know, the planet's body is quite a big energetic and physical body. So it's basically quite slow work, and it's an ongoing work of ours. It's what we call Earthworks. And it's about gathering people together. So we have a sort of a VR team, which are people that, some people that calibrated, that we muscle tested, were the right people to come in and be part of our group to do some work around raising the vibration of the planet, so that the planet could resolve some of its patterns and its fear about its own transformation.
And what was the result of that kind of work?
It's ongoing. I think it's quite a big project, actually, and it's ongoing.
But did within your own paradigm or feeling, what kind of shifts happen?
In terms of the planet?
Yes.
For us, the beginnings of this work, which has just happened, was just an awareness that the planet is a living body, that the planet has sort of an emotional body, and that the planet is aligned to our own sort of transformation, all of us moving out of this adolescent phase. So that was it. I think it's an ongoing body of work, this is.
Right. And the other aspect I'd love for you to talk about is this peak states of consciousness, and which is related to VR, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a map for where VR wants to bring people.
Mm. Well, you know, in the spiritual community, we're always thinking about enlightenment. And sometimes it seems like, well, you know, how exactly do I get there, you know?
Right.
And what we realized was that actually peak states of consciousness are natural states, but they're not deep and they're not ongoing. So just to give you an example, when we fall in love, we're in a peak state of consciousness, right? We're in the state of love. And not only are we feeling love for our beloved, but also it acts as a filter, and everything around us is seen through this filter of love. And when we're in that state, all the little things that used to irritate us don't seem to touch us in the same way.
Mm.
So, but that lasts for that honeymoon period, for example.
Oh, it doesn't last forever?
Well, we'd like it to. We're working on it, but...
Right. I mean, that's a great place to live, but you're right. The honeymoon is over at some point. Sometimes. Maybe for some people it's not over.
Right. So we all have different relationships to our peak states. Mm-hmm. For other people, it's freedom. So, for example, when you're traveling, you can feel so free and you feel like you totally flow in the moment. Mm-hmm. And then you come home and you lose that peak state of consciousness, and then you get irritated and you get triggered and so on.
Right.
And so there's this there's some work that says that basically when we're in the womb, we start developing all these peak states of consciousness, and we are in peak states of consciousness. But then when traumas occur in the womb, it starts blocking our ability to access more and more peak states of consciousness.
I mean, I think joy is our natural state. I think it's who we really are, and all these other states of consciousness are just in the way of that state of joy.
Right.
Well, it's innate in us. These peak states are innate in us, like the joy, the love. Mm. And our work is really about just sort of activating that again. And when it is activated, the peak state will just dissolve these illusions that we're holding, because they're just not relevant to us in that peak state anymore.
And you're vibrating at a much higher level
of
consciousness.
Yeah.
Right.
So what we've done is we've developed a process to activate peak states of consciousness, and then we're interested in working to deepen peak states of consciousness. But, yeah, in terms of this sort of shift of consciousness for humanity, I think that it's about activating these states, you know. Enlightenment can seem like a very sort of... lofty aspiration, and we don't know how to get there, but we can start activating these peak states, and then this kind of quantum leaps us in a way.
Mm. Well, how many different peak states are there, or have you mapped?
I think we've got about 10 maybe, but I think there are more to be revealed.
And it's interesting because a peak state of creativity is something that if somebody is in a very high level of consciousness, like kind of spiritual teachers and so forth.
Oh,
they
right.
have a very strong peak state of creativity going on.
You said that in one of our discussions, is that creativity is what calibrates at the highest level of peak states, right?
What it is that we thought, what we discovered is that we all have, say, two states that are the ones are kind of our default peak states. So I will easily go into my state of freedom and maybe unity, you know, a state of recognizing oneness in all of life. Those would be my default peak states, and Ella's is unconditional love and
freedom as well.
So we have these default peak states. But when we calibrated enlightened people, for example, the sort of the ancient ones like Buddha and Jesus, but also modern ones like Eckhart Tolle and so on, every time we asked what is their main peak state, it was creativity. So that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting. But as far as like your own peak state, I mean, Can't we live there? Is it possible? Or do we always have to come down from the peak state?
I think it's about deepening the peak state. So this is what we're exploring now. We looked into activating it. You can activate it, and then you want to deepen it so that it just, so that it's ongoing, basically.
So a lot of people are in some kind of peak state continuously, but it's just very, just on the surface. So it may not be something that they're really kind of in touch with all the time. So we're looking to help people to deepen their peak state, so it's with them, you know, really deeply and consistently.
So the way you work with peak states is the same way you work with a normal VR session, right? You go in, you test them, and
It's a process. This is a process that we take them through. We basically ascertain where they are now, and then we calibrate at what level that state vibrates at. And then we define the desired state, so we really go into exploring and calibrating so that we're accurate about what the new state is. And then we have a way of sort of sending that state into their future and sending them into the future and anchoring it.
That's exciting. And then, the result is that, like, I felt, and I didn't know where it came from. It may have come from other places, but I was just driving in this car and just felt really peaceful and joyful, like I was living a peak state. And that's what came to me. And so, I didn't stay there that long, but for a while it was very, very pleasant. We can live that way, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think that life is conspiring to push us in that direction in any case. But the lighter you are, the faster, you know, the further you can go.
Right, and I think the personal foundation of the VR work is very much about getting people to the place where they can have a peak state. But you do have to clear them on these levels of shame and guilt and fear and anger and all that to get to a peak state, right?
Or I don't think so, really. If somebody comes and says, I want to activate a peak state,
if they're willing, then it's going to happen.
Well, what about all those patterns in the way that the VR discovers?
The peak state can come in, and then the patterns can fall.
Yeah, because they just won't be vibrating with the old shame and the anger and so on. The thing is that if somebody's vibrating with a lot of shame and anger, they're probably not interested in a peak state. They're probably just interested in letting go of baggage. So what they will request will be something much more basic, like, oh, I want to, you know, to not be so angry, or I want a better job or something like that. And so, you know, if that's what they want, then that's what we'll help them work on. But somebody with a higher level of consciousness will say, oh, God, can I expand my paradigm? Great, let's do that. Or let's activate a peak state.
Well, this is a discussion I think that is very interesting, is the meeting of people, different people, and just seeing where they're at. Like, as we meet each other and friends, it's like, where are we resonating together in our collective field? You know, when you meet somebody, I mean, I'm saying beyond your work, it's just in the social aspect of building a new society. We're creating fields all the time, and it's just very curious, like, where we resonate with each other and the coming together of different people, what they are achieving in their resonance. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's happening all the time, and it always has, but I think now we're coming together a little more conscious with the fields we're building with each other seems to be more expansive and more inclusive of a collective vibration as well.
Yeah.
So where do you see the other... That's good, you say?
Yeah, saying it's kind of what we can bring to it.
Yeah. But what's the evolution of your work? Where do you see it going?
God, you know, our work is just quantum leaping all the time. So, you know, I think it's really beyond what our minds can conceive. It just seems to come through. So I couldn't really say, but, you know, our direction is awakening. And I think that's the cosmic direction for everybody right now anyway.
And what does that mean? What does awakening actually mean to you?
For me, it's just relaxing into the oneness of all life. It's a state of relaxation, I think. Just really relaxing into being.
I like that. I like that definition of relaxing into being. I do. And that's a peak state, I suppose. And I do also appreciate that you are moving into the unknown, like you haven't set a limit for this type of work because it's ongoing and it's evolving.
That's right, yeah. It is limitless.
Just like
the paradigm that we set, we want it to be limitless, not be in a box.
Right, so there is no... It's a paradigm that is ever expanding its boundaries.
Yeah.
Just like infinity, you know, there's no set to it. Of course, everyone's paradigm always felt like it was unlimited until people had pointed out the limits to their world, you know? I think there's a quote from Schopenhauer that says that the universe is only as big as our limits we put on it, you know? So, but I'm very excited that, you know, that you're really explorers of consciousness.
Yeah, we feel like little explorers, like little alchemists in our lab.
And do you feel like because, well, we've all had stuff, that all the stuff that you've had in your life are the things, the tools you're having to work with to deconstruct the basic human to open up to the bigger divine part, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, you mean in terms of our own personal experience?
Yes, our own personal experience and the limitations and the emotions that we've had are the tools for deconstructing the totality of humanity, in a sense, so we can all evolve. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I guess, yeah, we're all... I don't even see us necessarily as individual human beings. We're just part of the collective, you know. We're all just aspects of the human body, of the body of humanity. And we're all exploring things for humanity. Our own personal journeys are journeys on behalf of the collective. And everything that we experience personally are exactly the challenges that we need for ourselves and on behalf of everyone else, of the collective.
Do you feel an urgency at this time that this work be out there in a big way to help with the shift?
Well, on one hand, yes, I feel an urgency. And on the other hand, I feel like just relaxing and knowing that it's here and that people will find it when they vibrate with it, when they resonate with it, and when they're ready for it.
But you feel like, you both feel like agents of the field itself, huh?
Yeah, we recognize that we worked together in other lifetimes on this kind of work. So this was not new work. It came through so fast and so clear for us. And our testing, you know, showed up that we had worked together on this level before. So we feel that this is our life's work, and we feel that this work is here to assist humanity at this time. That's very clear.
Well, it's very exciting. So I think the peak states is such a big, important piece. Oh, just give the reference to how you found out about the peak state. I mean, I love that whole story, how you found the book. Tell that story.
Oh, one night we were doing some personal work, and then it tested out that Ella needed to get a book. And we said, oh, is it a book in the house? And it was like, no, it's not a book in the house. And we thought, well, where is it? And it was on the internet. So we went on Amazon, and we had to trawl through books that we'd never seen until we found this one book, which was Peak States of Consciousness.
Well, and how did you know how to get there? I mean, how were you directed to... Because there's probably 10 million books on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, we just kind of, we might have said, let's find a clue, and then it said peak. And so we typed in peak. And
wait, who said, where'd you get peak from?
Well, sometimes when we can't find, you know, when it's directing us to something and we can't pull it through, we'll say, oh, let's get a clue. So we'll have a book with different words. And finally, we'll test up, yes, this word, peak. So we said, okay, we type in peak on Amazon, and this book came up, which was Peak States of Consciousness by a man called Grant McFetridge. Mm-hmm. And he, has this whole body of work on peak states of consciousness, having been in one himself until he was 29, and then losing it, and then realizing actually there are ways to activate these states of consciousness. And so Ella read the book, and then some months later I picked it up and then said, oh, I think we're going to be doing some work on peak states of consciousness.
Mm. So it really inspired us to start up a whole body of work around that.
Oh, I think it's very important. I think really that's key, you know,
a key thing.
So you say you're being directed by the field. Is the field like an entity, you feel, or... some thunder here in New York. I guess that's my answer.
An entity. It's just like a higher intelligence.
But it's an aspect of you, of us, right?
Yeah.
But it's interesting that it's directing you to go places.
Mm. It feels that somehow in the field, it knows, not that it knows, it's not a personality, but the awareness is there of where we're going. So even before we, the two personalities, have any sense of where we're going, there is this higher knowing about where we're going.
I mean, isn't our ultimate goal to transcend the personality and be at one with that field, let's say?
I guess, yeah.
I mean, is that just...
One of ourselves, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know if we transcend the personality, but maybe have a different relationship to the personality. Maybe be a bit lighter with the personality, you know? Like, oh, look, the personality is in distress, okay, and I'm fine, you know?
Right, because we're identifying with the personality instead of the divine aspect.
I think the personality is like the tip of the iceberg, and then we've got the whole big bit of the iceberg, which is our essence. And it's not like we want to do away with the personality because it's there, obviously, for a reason. So, you know, I never make an enemy of mind or emotions or personality because, you know, we need to learn things about on that level. Yeah, it's an instrument, and it's sort of, it's that little portal, it's that little interface.
But I do think... we're here to own the human experience, and I think the personality is the vehicle for owning, this is just my belief, the totality of what it is to be human. And I do think when we own it, that is the ascension process of igniting the cellular structure, so we transcend with the awareness of everything that there is here on the human level.
Like, yeah, everything happens in the cell just as it happens as a greater whole. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Right, and I think we're here to ascend with the body into a greater field of awareness.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think about it as a shift in consciousness in human beings becoming much more energy-based, basically, less focused on this little sort of interface, that personality interface, and more sort of aware of their essence. But I don't know if, you know, we're coming to the final time or just another great era.
I think we're coming to another great era.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever final, but it's an evolutionary leap that I think is underway.
To me, very often I think of it, if you think back in terms of the evolution of the species, and you think back to sort of the primate population, and at some point some of those primates started standing up, and when they stood up they were expressing that this new component, this new program had sort of downloaded, which was the mind program. So we were going into the mental era of, you know, accessing this new tool, mind. And so we've spent this however many thousands of years developing mind, and now we've gotten to a point where mind is highly dysfunctional. But that's always what happens when you're about to finish with something. It starts to rot, you know, but then you know that something new is going to come forth. So now I see it as, well, what we had for many years is we've had enlightened figures who have appeared, and they've been like these first humans who started walking and who had this mind. So these enlightened figures were pointing the way to what we will all do, which is access that level of consciousness.
Right, which is a transcendence of the mind into a higher levels of knowing and way of accessing what we've been talking about, the field, with a intuition of being that evolves us even more. Yes, it is like, I love that way of expressing it. It's like standing up, but it's accessing this higher part that's beyond standing. It's like being, it's like a transparency with the totality of all that is.
Yeah, it's this kind of ability to communicate with all of life and to be in the love fields with all of life. And the thing with, you know, peak states is that we're not all going to enlighten in the same way. We're not all going to be at the level of consciousness of Jesus. And when you calibrate the different enlightened teachers, they're not all at the same level, which is interesting. And I think that's going to be true for us. And it's the same with intelligence. We don't all have the same level of intelligence. So we're going to move into this higher state of consciousness, but we'll all express it in our own way.
Well, that's if you're just looking at it as individual. If you're looking at it as all of us contributing to the overall field of energy, then we can calibrate the whole field as a oneness and see it on that level as well. But what you were talking about with evolution is, can you talk about your metamorphic work? Because it sounded like some of the things you've said about that. If you want to, I know it's a huge topic, but just to give people a taste of how that connects in with this area of evolution.
Right. Well, I teach this work, Metamorphic Technique, and really what we're doing with the Metamorphic Technique is we're looking at this journey in the womb. And when you look at the whole evolutionary journey in the womb, it's exactly the same journey that is repeated in the individual life, and it's exactly the same journey that we repeat when society evolves itself. And so, for example, you could say that right now where we are as, you know, a global humanity, we're now going through the birth canal. And what happens when you go through the birth canal is that everything that you've known, how it's been, is kind of falling away, breaking away. It's getting very uncomfortable, and you don't know what you're going towards except that life is pushing you there. And so that's what's happening now, is all the old structures are falling away. And we're about to do the same thing that you do when you leave the womb, which is that you quantum leap out and you start standing on your own two feet, meaning that you're independent from the mother. You're in the world in your own right. And so in that same way, we've been in the adolescent phase of humanity, which is where we've had all these sort of authority figures like governments and armies and pharmaceutical companies and so on. And so it's been that kind of scenario. And now these are going to break away and we're going to take on our own power. And become, you know, adults.
Right. It reminds me of the scene in the 2001 Space Odyssey of that giant fetus in space awakening to the next level. But it also reminds me of this interview I did with Bruce Lipton, who said that part of our evolution as a planet is to become coherent, a single coherent being, a oneness. Of humanity. He says we don't have humanity until we have a coherency among all humans. And that coherency creates a coherent field which will allow us to consciously connect with other onenesses. So in a way, it's the welcoming of alien intelligence, ET realities, but only when we're mature, when we've gone beyond the adolescence of the me, and we mature into who we are as beings capable of meeting other ones, and I do think this is our next phase of evolution, is meeting other ones to form a greater collective field. And that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's all very exciting because it's all unknown up until this point. But but the quantum leap is imminent, 2012.
And I'm going to be in England this year, and we're three of us are going to take people on a tour of the crop circles, which is, I feel, a signature from the unknown that is leading us to greater states of expansion with its forms and designs. I mean, anything you want to say about the crop circles?
Well, I think it's going to be a great experience to go with you because you have such great knowledge about the crop circles, and also with us because we bring, you know, what we've been speaking about. So, yeah, if anybody would like to join us, it's going to be great. We're going on, I think, July 10th.
Right, and they can look on my website, newrealities.com. I have something up there. So, And any final words about your VR work or any of the work both of you are doing?
Well, we'd just like to invite people to get in touch with us if they're interested in exploring this work. And what we can say is that we always muscle test to see if it's relevant for people. So if it's not, we'd never work with them. And so, you know, that's just operating from a really high integrity.
Right, but how do they get in touch with you?
Well, they can get in touch through the website, vibrationalrecalibration.com. Mm-hmm. And we also work internationally with people over the Skype. And, yeah.
So vibrationalrecalibration.com. Okay,
yeah.
Then your individual website is metamorphic, what is that?
Metamorphicjourneys.co.uk.
And Ella's individual website?
EllaOwen.co.uk.
And you're a kinesiologist by profession.
That's right.
And you deal with healing, physical issues, emotional.
So as well as sort of parallel to the vibrational recalibration, I work with kinesiology using nutrition and homeopathy.
Oh, great.
Working on a level of health level of people.
Mm.
Well, together and separately, you have a complete package there. So thank you. I mean, any final words that you would like to add?
Well, I would say that, you know, we're very interested in traveling with this work. So if anybody out there would like to sort of organize something, we run workshops, and they're very, very potent days because you do 4 hours of deep energy work. So we're open to any kind of suggestions for putting things together and collaborating with other people because that's what it's about now. It's about collaborating and sharing. So, yes, do get in touch.
Well, you'll be coming to New York probably sometime this year, and I'll let people know. Well, thank you both, Dominique Mehrhoff and Ella Owen.
Thanks, Alan. It's lovely speaking to you.
Thank you. VibrationalRecalibration.com. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and you can reach me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. I'll end with this song called The Song of the Soul.
And sing out.